It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Your fist in your mouth the whole fucking movie.
It was good. I liked it.
What'd you think?
You promised me you'd never forget what really happened. You promised.
I think this was about as perfect a modern horror film as I've seen.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was executed extraordinarily well.
There's no scientific equivalent for the word haunted, so we'll just say this object is responsible for at least 45 deaths in the 4 centuries of its recorded existence.
The only individuals that recognize its power have already been deceased. Yeah.
And the sound effects was just so sharp and just so realistic, and I was like, oh my god.
You told me she was sick, but she's not okay!
You know what your problem is you don't listen! Why?
Dad, the only person in the planet that we can trust to protect us,
right,
is going insane.
If you're gonna make a phone call, you need to do it outside its radius of influence. Otherwise, there's no way of knowing who you're really talking to.
As soon as they saw the video of them holding the conversation and moving this shit around, that would have been like the mic drop moment.
Yeah, like, I'm out. I'm done. Sorry. Like,
look at the time. It's fuck this shit o'clock. Yeah. Bye.
We've already lost what we wanted to do. Get the fuck out. I'm out.
We're done. It's over. We get to stand here and watch that thing die.
They're all getting lost in their recollections of the past. It's kind of stymied them from doing anything but get the fuck out.
Bye.
This is your host, Cash Wampum, welcoming you to the first show of 2018. We hope your holidays were smooth. If you caught the very last part of the previous show, we joked about covering a film that we absolutely hated, which is quite the opposite of what we usually do here. The usual MO of this show is basically saying, here, check this movie out, it's fantastic, and give it the Horror 101 treatment to prove our point. What about a mirror image of that format, where we give the Horror 101 treatment and just flay a movie alive? Could you handle that? Do you think we should? The more we talk about it over here, the more we like the idea, but our proposed strategies are all over the place. Some of us want to shit on horrible remakes that have turned some of our beloved titles upside down. Some of us want to cover movies that we thought had an excellent premise, but just fell flat. We want to hear from you. If you think an anti-horror 101 show would appeal to you, drop us a message with your thoughts on how we should tackle the project, and I will make this promise right now. At least one show this year will be a Downer Debbie for your entertainment, but not this show. Tonight, Nude and I decided to show the crew a movie from 2013 that's one of our recent favorites in the last 5 years. It's Mike Flanagan's Oculus.
Everybody's New Year's was good. I haven't seen you guys since 2017.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Long last time. Literally on Facebook, I was like, I don't know, like 12 o'clock, Happy New Year, 12:05 in bed. Like,
uh-huh, just, Dad.
Oh,
uh-huh.
Totally.
You're such a fucking dad. How about it?
I am.
How about it? So the prequel year went great. Everybody seemed to like it. There wasn't any criticism. There was a few people that wanted, I don't know if you've listened to the show, but there's a small part of the beginning where I give you clips of films that we were talking about doing, but never made the cut, just so people had a little
snippet. Slay the Nazarene.
That's in there.
Yeah.
That's definitely in there. Subspecies 3. I'm trying to think of the list. There's Hellraiser 3, Subspecies 3, Alien 3, Amityville 3. Yeah. Let's do a movie that I think we're going to get behind. Helen and I agree that this was a good one. Nick hasn't seen it yet. Yeah. I know you haven't seen it yet.
If it's one I think of, no.
Have you seen Oculus?
No.
Okay, good. So nobody here has seen it. You know what it's about.
I know that it centers around a haunted mirror. That's all I know.
And, I mean, that's basically, like, yeah. If you read the cover of it, that's basically all you're going to get. There's a mirror and something's wrong with it. It's a horror film.
Just like Night of the Demons.
Eat a bowl of fuck!
I didn't even know that it involved a mirror.
Really?
I knew the name.
And it stars of Doctor Who fame.
Terry Gillen. Yay, Terry Gillen.
I won't tell you what it is, but there was an element to the movie Frailty with Bill Paxton. Oh. Have you ever seen that one?
Yes.
There's an element...
You've given it away!
No, absolutely not. There's an element to Frailty, we'll discuss it later, that hit me with this film as well. This is a film about people understanding that they're up against something that could not be possible, but is... And they realize that in our reality, nobody's going to help them in this struggle. So they take it upon themselves to deal with it in a very scientific method and falling short.
I hear your voice. Believe your lies. A window, portal, darkened door. Should you claim my staring eyes, my soul you hold forevermore?
Remember what we talked about. You've had a support system, a mandated support system to help you get well. Kaylee had to get by on her own. It's very important that you reconnect with your sister. But it's more important that you protect your recovery.
At the beginning of the film, we meet Tim, 21-year-old psychiatric patient who's about to be released. Seems he had some trauma when he was a kid. He's gonna come out, meet up with his older sister Kaylee, family reunion, everyone's happy, and then she drops a bomb on him.
I found it.
What do you mean?
You know, it wasn't easy. I tracked it down mostly through second bidders, people who lost at the auctions. It was in storage, part of an estate collection in Bremen. It took me a year and a half to get it into our warehouse, and it lasted less than a week. It's about to ship out to a new buyer, so we only have a few days. That should be enough.
A few days for what, Kaylee?
To keep our promise. And kill it.
Well, this film's, 2013. So it's a few years old.
Yeah.
It was, you know what? If you read about it, it was shot in like 08 or 09 or something like that. It was shot, it didn't come out right away. And usually you think, oh, if they push it back, usually that's a problem.
There's a problem with reshoots or production, post-production hell or something.
In this case, a solid film.
You promised me you'd never forget what really happened. You promised.
I was 10 years old.
Well, I'm doing it tomorrow night. And I could really, really use your help.
For the good half of the film, you're really not sure who's crazy and who's real here. If she is maybe so obsessed, because he got the therapy, she didn't, but they both experienced the same traumatic event. And so you get two different mindsets. You get him who's trying to be rational about it, and she's had basically no coping mechanism for all this time except her crazy machinations and the planning she's had for this night.
Hello again. You must be hungry.
It was like right at the beginning where she's talking to the mirror before they pack it up to move it. And you see the things moving in the background. I thought that was really well done because you're expecting like the whole jump scare, one thing, two thing, and then something. And then it just, kind of just showing that even as weak as it is at that particular point, it's still just like,
so powerful.
I'm gonna fuck with you.
It's like, yeah, I remember you.
And she's only standing like 10 feet away from it, not even, so.
I like how it shows the, because there's three shrouded figures behind her. The one in the middle turns its head a bit. She turns around, there's only two.
First, but then the second time they all turn their heads.
And then she turns back, there's three again, and the other two turn their heads.
Yeah, like I just thought the way that that scene played out, because it set the tension for the movie, because especially when you realize that, you know, when the guy shows up and kind of scares her, and then looks, and then there's only the two.
There's only two. Yeah. The one that she was about to go for.
And then it's like, playing with your head, like, what would she have seen if she pulled that sheet?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that, because it set a good tension. It showed you that it was, you know, it. And at that point, you don't know, is it like an actual ghost? Like, you know, because it throws you curveballs, but not in, like, overt ways, like just nice little subtle ways that just kind of make you wonder, like, okay, what in the fuck's this movie about? Then as it expands, you realize what its actual ability is.
And it's, you know, there were scenes like that where, like, no noise, just somebody visualizing something and something very quietly happening, but there's menace there.
Right.
That's the art that we don't get very often these days.
Basically, the entire movie literally is a mindfuck.
I looking back at it now, I took that more of a warning. Like, do you really want to go down this path again? If you want to play, I'll play with you, kind of deal. That's the way I took it.
Yeah.
That's the way I took it. You know, you got away the first time. You really want to go down this, you know, because I've been around 4 centuries.
Well, this is my first time seeing it. You've seen it more than once.
Yeah.
So I can see you putting that narrative on it since you've seen it before.
But even now, look back.
But even, like, for my first time, I didn't take it so much as a challenge. It was basically just kind of a nice way to build tension, right, and kind of get you thinking about it.
Yeah.
At that point, from a viewer's, like, a first-time viewing standpoint, it built a lot of tension because I had no inclination whatsoever of what the rules are, what its power was. Was it haunted? Was it a ghost? Did it, you know? Yeah, so I liked that particular scene. You saw it as a, you know, it kind of...
Now
challenge.
I do. Kind of a warning. Like, yeah. Do you really want to do this again?
That warning does make sense, because when she approaches the mirror, it's like saying hi to something. She says hello to it.
Yeah.
She touches and says, oh, hello again. And she's saying, I really hope that... You must be hungry. And it's a conversation. It really is when it starts. It's interesting. And then it's kind of like it's saying, oh, I remember you too. You
know,
there is a bit of that element there. I think you're right. The mirror's brought a little bit worried too, because it's thinking, this is the one that got away, right? This is the one who lived. Do I really want to, you know, let her have a shot at me, right? So I think it is a warning shot. I think that may be true.
My car's by the loading dock. Hello.
Hey.
Got a phone.
Cool.
You just need to sign the order.
I don't feel good about the way we left it last night. Can we meet up somewhere and talk?
Of course. Can you come by the house?
Sure.
What's your address?
No. The house.
You're probably wondering why the big hard-on for this mirror. The movie will explain everything. It skillfully jumps back and forth between the kid's past and present, explaining how this mirror and its evil destroyed their family, why Tim had to be locked away in an asylum for most of his life, and why Kaylee is bent on revenge.
She needs a doctor. You told me she was sick, but she's not okay.
No, the problem is you don't listen. I told you not to go into our room, didn't I? What do you do? You disobey me. Why? You disobey me, so now you get grounded. You and your snot-nosed little brother over there are not to step foot outside of this house. Now get out of here.
And I think what sells it most for me is the performance of the children.
Yeah.
If they hadn't sold that real terror, that childhood terror, as well as they did, as genuinely as they did, this movie I don't think would have worked as well. And I think they had two really strong child actors. I'll be watching to see what they do next, because I tell you, those kids are going to want to do something.
This isn't you.
It is me. I've met my demons. And they have many.
I've seen
the devil. He is me.
I think the best performance in the film was actually the father. He was really, really, really good. The older version of the brother, he was kind of dull as dishwater. But no, it was a good film.
But I have to disagree with Paul, though, about finding the older version of Tim as kind of dull. I think he's more, you know, he's been through the rehabilitation, kind of like muted, trying to make sense of things, and he's spent years to being told that it's not the mirror, and he's trying, not really sure of what, where he's at. So I think he's more confused himself, and trying to figure out, is this reality? Is this my you know, my mind playing tricks on me? So I think all the actors did well, but I have to agree with who said it, the father. Yeah, I agree with Paul that the father's probably the best actor. Just, he goes from demure to like raving lunatic in like seconds. It was good.
So, the purpose of today's experiment is to prove that the object behind me, the Lasser Glass, is home to an observable, predictable, supernatural force. There's no scientific equivalent for the word haunted, so we'll just say this object is responsible for at least 45 deaths in the 4 centuries of its recorded existence.
Can I just stop you for a second?
No. Don't ever turn off the camera.
I will say my favorite part is probably her going through the history of the mirror. All the owners and their brutal ends.
Telling the tale.
Yeah.
All right.
That, because all of a sudden now, okay, we know that we're dealing with a possessed mirror. You know, we know that it affected the lives of these two individuals. We kind of, and at that point, we have a little bit of a glimpse of what happened to them. But now she's just opened this thing up to 4 centuries of evil. There's so much that I want to know about this mirror now, you know, like, and she's given me snapshots of really gruesome details of the influence of what this fucking mirror is doing. I thought it was cool as fuck. Dark. I like that kind of dark shit.
The origin of the Lasser Glass is unknown, so I can't provide a complete history, but the trail starts in London in 1754. Philip Lasser, the 17th Earl of Leicester, acquired the mirror and hung it over his fireplace. And another precaution. So in 1755, Philip Lasser was found at their grand fireplace, burned beyond recognition. While his estate was dismantled and scattered throughout southern England, one of the family's stewards claimed to see Philip reflected in the mirror, an allegation apparently taken seriously enough to warrant a church investigation into the house. The next case of note is Mary O'Connor, 1904. She hung the mirror in her private bathroom. 2 weeks later, her niece Beatrice finds Mary dead in the bathtub. Now, the official coroner's report lists the cause of death as, get this, dehydration. The woman died of thirst while soaking in a full tub for 3 days.
The only problem I sort of have with the mirror, and I understand it, I get it, but it's a conceit that the movie has to deal with, is the fact that they say that its history is lost. It just magically appears somewhere.
We don't know the origin.
We don't know the origin of it. And I wish at some point, that, you know, through the daughter's research or whatever, she would have found out whatever some of the history was.
Well, if they did that, then how could they make a prequel later?
Yeah, well that's the thing. Are they going to?
I would welcome it.
Absolutely. I mean, you could do anything in the history of this.
I'd be interested to find out.
There's at least 400 years, according to this canon. There's 400 years of history.
Yeah.
You know, and we've probably only heard of some of the stories about 45 wrath people. Of this looking glass.
17 something when it first showed up. Because don't forget, the creation of something, it usually doesn't show up in records until it's being sold.
Right.
The next case of note is Alice Carden in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, 1943. Neighbors reported hearing screams and loud bangs from the house. The police found the children drowned in a locked cistern. Alice herself was in the nursery, and both of her legs are completely shattered. Her left arm is broken in 4 places, and 6 of her ribs are crushed. In her right hand is a large hammer she's been using to break her own bones, and they find her just as she's going to work on her skull. Her right arm, though, is completely unharmed, because she needed it to wield a hammer.
The only reason that it's remained alive and intact for 4 centuries is the fact that the only individuals that recognize its power have already been deceased.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody is the wiser, except for Kaylee.
Tobin Capp, 1955. Starved to death in his own bedroom. The mirror was hung over his dresser. He had a pet Dalmatian. 1965, California. The mirror hangs in the lobby of the Hill Trust Bank in San Diego. A 10-year teller, Marsha Wicker, locks her manager in a bank vault and then chews through a live power line. 1975, Marisol Chavez dies in her bedroom of hemorrhaging due to a miscarriage. In her nightstand, they find every single one of her teeth in a little plastic bag and a pair of bloody pliers. 2002.
You know, there's a huge difference between causation and correlation.
I know the difference. Thank you.
But I know he says it. He says correlation is not causation. It's one of my favorite phrases.
My favorite line.
Oh, it is that? That's a great point.
Yeah, correlation does not equal causation.
Yeah. But the thing is, at a certain point, it's more than just a pattern, because she had quite a lot of evidence. It wasn't just one or two things. 12 cases, at some point I'd be like, maybe there's something to this.
Can I get back to this now?
Sure, but let's get to it, Kaylee. Let's talk about why we're really here.
Let's. 2002. The lacquer glass adorns the home office of Alan Russell, software designer. Husband to Marie. Father to Timothy and Kaylee. Within 2 weeks of its arrival, Marie suffers an intense psychological breakdown and is tortured and murdered in the family home.
By whom? By her husband.
So say the police reports.
And her husband was shot to death by her own son. Right in front of her daughter.
I intend to prove that none of the people I've just described were responsible for their actions. Alan Russell was not a murderer, he was a victim. One of many, as it turns out, victims of the supernatural force that resides in that mirror.
So why don't we just end it right now and smash the goddamn thing?
You really don't remember, do you?
Remember what?
Please, smash it.
You know, they even deal really well with why don't you just smash the damn thing, how hard that seems by the end of the movie, how it is geared to self-defense, and in fact, it doesn't really, it plays subtle and just whispering and influential until the mother, in a fit of rage, throws that object off his desk, and it hits the wall next to the mirror, and then the mirror's like, oh, no, oh, no, that was too close, and then it went nuts.
Yeah.
Remember?
The thing that I like the most is the little twist that they did on it. Because mm-hmm. they give you this impression almost like the mirror itself is like difficult to break or indestructible. Because they show a couple times like the kids with the golf clubs.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy shit, if they're wailing on this thing with a golf club, like how hard is it to fucking break? And then they do that reveal at the end that, you know, it already started getting to the kids and they're just hitting the wall next to it.
Yeah.
Like that, I thought that was probably one of my favorite little twists in the movie.
Favorite scene?
I think I just said it.
Uh-huh.
Why did you put the stool down?
Because I'm trying to have a conversation with you.
Uh-huh. Only one person I know of was ever documented trying to break the mirror. Oliver Jeffries, 1971, a teacher at Manhattan's Duhame Academy, where the mirror hung in the central lecture hall. One morning, he reportedly ran at the mirror with a fireplace poker, shouting about how it needed to be destroyed, but he never struck a blow. According to his students, he stood there quietly for almost a minute before walking out of the hall and into traffic. Clearly capable of defending itself, and I think it just disarmed you.
It gives you the idea, like, this thing doesn't have any supernatural power to defend itself. It's not unbreakable.
No.
If you were to strike it, it would shatter.
It's just very
But
clever.
it's making sure that any outside exterior influences cannot do it.
Yeah.
Which leads me to my final precaution. You're looking at a 20-pound Danforth anchor. Another 20 pounds added with barbells attached to a modified ballast rail and a spring pin lock connected to a mechanical kitchen timer. No electricity, which is important, and we're about 10 seconds away. The timer is not manually reset every 30 minutes. That is, if no one is here to stop it. The mirror goes right there. And the only thing to prevent that from happening again is our continued survival. So you know why we don't have to wait for it to come out and play? Because we got a loaded gun to its head. And I expect it'll be eager to defend itself.
And so she's been planning this for a while, so while he's been getting therapy, all she's had to cope with are her insane construction of this night. That's what she's
revenge.
Had. Yeah, revenge.
She's bent on revenge.
And how, down to the most minute detail, too. Like, so is she nuts, or is she planning really well? Is she being smart, or is she just that crazy? Well, you don't know early on, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I think she's crazy for revenge. That's for damn sure. She's been plotting this.
She's crazy in her sanity. Like, she has something that she wants to do, and she's gone so far over the edge to do it.
Well, determination.
It's an obsession.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and we don't realize what the stakes are, so we look at her as kind of off her nut early on with all of the, what seems like unnecessary planning while she's going through it. But as the movie progresses, you're like, well, now we see why she had to go to these extremes, because you don't know what to trust.
I'm now reviewing the tape of the last few minutes.
He was having an affair. Same thing he was. It was a bad marriage. Look how
the thing is, as soon as they saw the video of them holding the conversation and moving this shit around, that would have been like the mic drop moment.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm out. I'm done. Sorry.
Look at the time. It's fuck this shit o'clock. Yeah. Bye.
We've already lost what we wanted to do. Get the fuck out. I'm out. Like,
I don't remember doing that. Do you? You don't. And the temperature in the room has increased another 2 degrees to 78 degrees Fahrenheit, but the alarms didn't go off, which means, oh boy. Okay, we've lost the ficus and the blooming plants, which tells me that the dog provided at least enough energy to bait the shark.
I'm gonna call the doctor.
Tim, if you're gonna make a phone call, you need to do it outside its radius of influence. Otherwise, there's no way of knowing who you're really talking to.
At some point, I think they should have both said, okay, we've lost control of the situation. We need to leave right now. And they can't. For some reason,
well, they tried to, but it was way too late.
Trickery. Yeah, there was too much trickery going on. And the fact that they're all getting lost in their recollections of the past that keeps them there. It's kind of stymied them from doing anything but get the fuck out.
And I actually forgot to pump the mouth trauma, the two scenes, and so that was...
Tooth trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, the tooth thing.
There was two mouth traumas going on. I'd say the goriest thing in the film is the biting through the light bulb.
The look of horror on her face, on her eyes. I mean, we saw it coming. It wasn't like a big surprise, but just by it happening, it was like, oh my god. And then the sound effects was just so sharp and just so realistic. And I was like, oh my god, covering my eyes, but even just listening to it, because you guys know how I am with mouth and teeth trauma. So just kind of listening to it made it that much more ferocious for me. It was good. It was good scene.
She kind of like coughs like a guffaw, you know, like, and it sprays it with blood. You're like, okay, there's trauma there. And then it gives you the full picture where her mouth is gaping. She's got this blood flying out of it. And then she's got to slowly and tenderly take out this shard of glass out of her mouth.
A river of good, deep crimson blood, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, have you ever had a piece of glass embedded in you?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I mean, at some point, it's got to come out. When it comes out, your body's fluids.
Well, honestly...
have some fluids.
Glass cuts are, you know, fucking nasty.
Oh, I know. I've been there.
Yep.
Maybe we should stay together.
But the best part about it was, it gave you a moment of, oh shit.
Yeah, it did.
And you saw it coming, but then in the end, it's a trick. It was the writer setting you up for it, going, oh, I know what's going to happen, and then giving it to you, and then saying, haha, it's just the mirror fucking with everyone. It fucked with you, and it fucked with her.
Absolutely, yeah.
Some smart writing there.
Yeah.
Some smart writing there.
Me, Timbo.
Timbo.
There was that great moment when she was coming down the stairs just as her past self was going up the stairs. I thought that was clever.
She was coming down the stairs and the brother was...
The brother was going up the stairs,
coming down.
And the kind of blending of realities that they're both kind of superimposed.
Yeah.
And so you get the momentum building of the getting towards the mystery of what happened that night... how many years ago, and the kind of real-time, you know, present suspense kind of overlap, and it really does build really, I thought, quite effectively. So that was something I hadn't seen probably since It. It was the only other time where they kind of clashed childhood trauma versus present-day horror.
And you mean the
miniseries?
Yeah, the Tim Curry version.
It's not real.
I thought I told you not to play around in here.
It's almost a tragic story, because as children they went through hardship, they lost their parents, they were almost killed themselves, but they escaped the evil of this mirror. Not many people who've been enveloped by its radius have been able to do that, but they did escape. It cost them their parents, they did escape, only to put themselves in harm's way again.
Tim, look,
I want you to promise me that when we're big and we're strong, we will make this right. We have to kill that thing. For Mom and Dad.
And the other thought that I had was at the end, when they're kids and they make the promise,
yeah,
were they still inside the sphere of influence? Did they really get away?
Was it the mirror saying, I've lured them back to finish them off?
Did it?
That's
you know, just throw in one last little thing to make sure that they would, you know, she went through a lot of shit to get back to that mirror.
And it's the same kind of madness it planted in the parents, you know, that have been lingering all this time.
That's, so it's like, no, it's the one that got away. Did it? Did she really? Was the mirror looking at it like, oh, it's the one that got away, came back? Or is it like, all right.
Waiting, yeah. Well, that's interesting. I like that.
Where are you taking me? No, it wasn't my fault. It was the mirror.
Let go. It wasn't me. It wasn't me. It was the mirror. It was the mirror.
Please.
Ryan Stewart, you had your fist in your mouth the whole fucking movie.
It was good. I liked it.
What'd you think?
I think this was about as perfect a modern horror film as I've seen.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was executed extraordinarily well.
Don't forget! Don't forget our promise! Don't
forget! Score it! Ryan Stewart!
You know what? This score may actually go up over time because I had a little bit of trouble with the pacing towards the end. It felt a bit long. I didn't feel the length of the movie until like the last 20 minutes when I thought, okay, let's wrap this up.
You want to watch it again?
I would watch it again, but I think there was a bit of pacing trouble towards the final act.
Okay.
It went on a bit too long for me. Otherwise, I think this is a 9.5 for me.
9.5?
9.5.
Dear Lord.
I can't believe how much I like this movie. I like the elements. The acting is phenomenal. The pacing is brilliant. It builds atmosphere. It does everything I want a horror film to do. It relies more on mood and acting and performance and just really building that tension up over time. It invests well in suspense.
Okay, what's more likely? That you're misremembering events from 11 years ago? Or that the mirror eats dogs?
Nude!
I'm gonna give it a 9. I loved it. I loved it the first time. I loved it even more the second time. And every element, I think everything had purpose. I think the flashbacks, you know, back and forth, fit well. The actors, actresses were just perfect for it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was really excited that we were going to review this one, so I'm glad that we did.
They did a bang-up job on you in there, didn't they? You were perfectly normal when they locked you up. You had to go batshit to get out.
Nefarious Paul B!
I'm not going to go quite as high as a 9 or 9.5. I did have issues with pacing. That was a big thing, big issue with me. I'd say probably 8. It's good. It does a lot of things really, really well. I like the fact that it doesn't rely on gore. It relies on atmosphere. There's not a lot of jump scares. There are jump scares in it, but there's not a lot. It doesn't rely on them.
Right.
There's not a lot of gore. I think there's only one or two scenes of any actual gore at all. Some very good performances. The kids are excellent. The father is phenomenal.
It's a trick to get us back inside.
This is a trick to keep us standing there.
Nick,
I actually got a number in my head before any of you motherfuckers said anything.
Prove it!
I wish. We should actually do that, you know, just like
put it on your
write it all down.
To like the Eastern judge, you know. But I gave it 8.5. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. But there were times and during it where I was just kinda like, check the phone, okay, what time is it? You know, it's just I'll agree with Paul. There were some pacing issues.
Do you think, like, okay, if this was a film where they shed 5 minutes of, you know, the atmosphere that they wanted to give you, that obviously was a little bit too long. If they shed 5 minutes, you would have enjoyed it that much more.
It just, honestly, like, I'm not complaining. Just for me, like, I do like slower paced movies, but at the same time, there has to be a cadence to it.
911, what's your emergency?
Yeah, hi, I just called 2705 Hawthorne.
You're going to have your father call. The doctor will be there tomorrow. The doctor will be there tomorrow. The doctor will be there tomorrow.
If it was 114 minutes, I would agree with you, but 104 minutes, that's about right.
Hour 45, that's...
I mean, there was a lot of story to tell there. There was two stories to tell, the past and the present, and then you had to tell them both and then fuse them together at the end.
Yeah.
Which I thought they did wonderfully, and for that, I will give it a 9! I would have to say that Oculus is probably one of my favorite horror films to come out in the last 10 years. I'm pleased that everybody in the room enjoyed the film. It's always fun for me to show people a new horror film and then coming out liking it, giving it high praise. It's fun for me. Because you guys at some point are probably going to go back and watch this again just to catch the shit that you missed.
That's why I say my score might go up, because I find movies where I have initial pacing issues, they tend to sort themselves out on repeat viewing. So,
Watch it again and let me know how you feel.
Yeah. We're done. It's over. We get to stand here and watch that thing die.
And there you have it, Oculus, for our first show of 2018, starring Karen Gillan, Brenton Thwaites, Katie Sackhoff, Rory Cochrane, and special mention to Garen Riott and Annalise Basso, who played the young versions of Tim and Kaylee. They did an excellent job. The film was directed by Mike Flanagan, who also directed the recent slasher Hush, which you might want to check out. If this show seemed a bit rushed, I apologize, but your host did have surgery recently. My gallbladder was removed while fighting a cold, but I still wanted to get the show out for you by the end of the month. Big thanks to Nude for taking care of me while I recover. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. Make sure to check out Oculus from 2013 if you haven't already, and we're hoping for your suggestions concerning that negative flame show that we promised at the beginning of the podcast. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, the nefarious Paul B., and the lovely Nude, this is Cash Wompomp saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.
That is a large bag of sugar you got there. By the way, Paul B., I think you might have some shit in that bag in that skull. Go get your shit in my skull.